I'm going to start with something from the beginning of the Sedra, a mitzvah that it is worthwhile to know about, probably for future reference. Torah says, Ve'ela ha-mishpotim asher tasim lefneihem. These are the laws, mishpotim, usually apply to civil law, that you should place before them. So Rashi brings down, asher tasim lefneihem, lifnehem, below lifnei, oved elilim. In front of them and not in front of idol worshippers. In other words, don't bring your disputes in front of goyim. Vafilu yodata bedin echad, shehem donin also kedine Yisrael. Even if you know that in a certain law, the non-Jewish courts will judge the same law as the Jewish courts, al tivyehu berko shalohem. Don't bring it before their courts. The non-Jewish courts are called erkaos. Shahamedi dini Yisrael ifnei armoyim. Person who brings a case before a non-Jewish court, mechalas Hashem, he desecrates God's name. Umiyakar shem hu'elilim, he gives honor to the names of the idols. Lahashbicham or lahashivam, to praise them or to make them important. Kilo kitzureinu tzuram, vo'iveinu plilim. The pasuk says in Dvarim, our God is not like their God, and our enemies, plilim can mean to judge litigations. Meaning, kishoiveinu plilim, when our enemies are judging our litigations, zehu edus li'ili yirasam. That is testimony to making their gods great. Because we're going to judge in their laws. That's what Rashi brings down. The source of this Rashi is a Gemara in Gittin on Daf Peches, Daf 88. The Shulchan Aruch, Toshin Mishpat, Simin Chavav, Sif Aleph, brings down the following Psak Halacha. Asur Lodum Bifnei Dayani Akum. It's asur to judge, to bring cases to be judged before non-Jewish courts, Uverko Shalahem, Afilu bedin shedonim bedina Israel. Even if we know that the criteria of the judgment will be the same as it would have been in a Jewish court. Afilu nisratzu beis bale dinim ladum b'tnei amoser. Even if both sides agree to go to a non-Jewish court, still prohibited. And the Berhetiv there brings. Shafilu bedover shodim don dina lenafshi. Even in those cases where a person is allowed to take the law into his own hands, still not allowed to take it before a non-Jewish court. And the Aruch HaShulchan also paskins like that. Even in those areas that a person is allowed, under certain circumstances, a person can take the law into his own hands, right? He's still not allowed to take it before a non-Jewish court. This is a Torah prohibition. We learn it from this pasuk. Ve'ela hamishpatim asher tasim lifnehem. Only before them, that is before Jewish judges who are qualified, and not before non-Jewish judges, and that is a lav habo mechlal aseh. It's a negative precept that comes from a positive pasuk. This is what you do, this and not this. Dafka in front of Jews, in front of a qualified beis din, and not in front of a non-Jewish court. The Chukos Chaim says that this prohibition is like idol worship. Bringing litigation in front of a non-Jewish court is like worshiping idols, and therefore it's Yehorig Val Yavar. If someone puts a gun to your head and says, bring litigation before a non-Jewish court, or I'll kill you, you have to be killed, according to him. Okay? And a person who does this is Mechal Hashem. He desecrates God's name, and the only atonement for such a person is being buried, meaning only when he dies will there be atonement. And the Rabbeinu Bachya says that this prohibition is more serious than murder. Okay, it's a pretty serious prohibition. The Tashbatz says that any monies that a person gets from a non-Jewish court, from a judgment in a non-Jewish court, that had he gone to a Jewish court, he wouldn't have gotten, is robbery. And if he uses that money, let's say, to marry a woman or whatever, the marriage is no marriage. Because it's not his money. The Tashbatz says even more than that. He says, even if you have a non-Jew that you have litigation with, and the non-Jew is willing to go to a Beis Din, then you're not allowed to take him to a non-Jewish court either. You have to go to a Beis Din. If you have a non-Jew that you have an argument with and he's willing to go to a Jewish court, then you're not allowed to take him to a non-Jewish court. You have to go to a Jewish court. Now, it would seem on the surface that this only applies where the non-Jewish court is idol worshippers. And they believe that their idols gave them their laws, or they believe that their idols, their gods, stand behind their judgment. So by going to that court, you are at least admitting or giving strength or giving praise and importance to idols. But what happens if the non-Jewish court is a secular court? Not an idol-worshipping court, it's a secular court. No idols at all. Okay? So there again, the Tashbatz has a Shaila, Lagabi this, Lagabi Muslim courts. Muslim courts, yeah, Muslims are not idol-worshippers. Would it be usher to go and bring litigation in front of a Muslim court? And the Tashbatz says that it is usher, right? Because the idea here is not so much that you are giving credence to idol worship. It's that you are giving the impression that God's Torah is not important. That we don't have our own laws, we need to go and get other laws. So it makes no difference if it's a secular court or a religious non-Jewish court. Both of them are prohibited. The Rashba says the same thing, right? It makes no difference if it's a religious idol-worshipping court or a secular court. Right, in both cases, it looks, the Sma says, it looks like you're making the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu and our laws not true. That we need to go and depend on other people's laws. Okay. In fact, the Tzitz Eliezer brings from Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, the time that the Medina was established, the State of Israel was established. He says that any court that rules according to its own ideas, okay, a secular court, makes up its own laws, so that's also considered idol worship for us. Because following our own ideas and not following the ideas of the Torah is also called turning to strange gods and strange powers. So to a certain degree, even a secular court, right, is considered the idol worship, even if they don't worship idols, is not religious. Okay. Now the Chazon Ish says that this applies not only to non-Jewish secular courts, it applies even more so to Jewish secular courts. In other words, the justice system of the State of Israel, right, is no less a abrogation of this law than a non-Jewish court in America. In fact, the Chazon Ish says that it's afilu yoser meguna. It's even worse to go to a Jewish secular court than to go to a non-Jewish secular court. Because here, what's it called, they consciously, Jews consciously took the laws of the Torah and exchanged them for secular law. So it's a worse chilul Hashem. Goyim did it is one thing, but Jews themselves did it. Right? Jews created a state, and instead of making the laws of the state Torah law, made the laws of the state English law, Turkish law, and other secular law. Okay. And even though we find that in when it comes to monetary things, people can make conditions that are not against the Torah, even because that's what people agree. So they can make monetary conditions the way they want to make them. And also, you're allowed even to accept a non-Torah person upon yourself to judge, or even as a witness, or whatever, right? And there's such a thing called Erkos Shasuria, people, judges, that didn't know the halacha, and they judged according to their, their common sense, or whatever. And all of that was permissible. It says the Chazon Ish, there's no comparison to where you create an institutionalized justice system that is based on laws that are not the Torah. On a one-to-one basis, where you don't have somebody who's well-versed in Torah and you want to accept somebody to judge according to his understanding, right, but he doesn't make a law system that's against the Torah, that's acceptable. But to create an alternate law system, institutionalized, is a terrible chilul Hashem and has the same law as going to a non-Jewish secular court, even worse, says the Chazon Ish. There is a question whether a Beit Mishpat La'avodah, right? A court that is made for work litigation. Okay, people are go there for what's called employees against employers or whatever. There, most of the laws of employers and employees depend on the custom of the place. And the courts there also are not necessarily by the judges, but the representatives of the workers and representatives of the employer or whatever. It's more like a bororut. It's more like a compromise kind of situation. Okay, even there, however, Rabbi Eliyashiv holds that you're not allowed to go to a court like that either. Right. You can't go to a court. You have to go to a Beis Din. If the Beis Din wants to say what the custom is or wants to consult, right, a court like that to find out what the custom, what's customary in that place, that's the Beis Din's decision. But you have to go to a Beis Din and not to a court of litigation for work either. And it's brought down in the Svarim that Paskin these Shilas, that it's a tremendous isser for a worker to take his employee to a secular court, right, and to take him especially for monies that he wants to collect because of he was fired or whatever, that the Torah doesn't, okay, right, and the money that he takes is considered stealing. The Shulchan Aruch, continues, V'chol ha'bol lidon bifneihem, Hareza Rasha, anybody who does take someone else to a secular court is a wicked person. Uke'ilu chireif v'gideif, it's like he is blaspheming God's name. V'heirim yad v'toras Moshe Rabbeinu olav ha-shalom. He is raising his hand against the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch adds, V'yesh bi'ad beizdim l'nadoso l'achrimo. And the Beis Din has the power to put this person in Cherem, to excommunicate him, until he will relinquish his litigation in a secular court. You even put into Cherem, you excommunicate somebody who helps somebody litigate in a secular court. Not only the person who goes to the secular court, even the person who helps him. Now he says another case. Person took somebody to court in a secular court and he lost. Now he wants to bring the case back to a Jewish court. Okay. The Ma'arik says that the Jewish court doesn't pay any attention to him. You chose to go to a secular court, you lost, tough luck. We are giving you a fine. We're not going to be involved with your case anymore. And some say that you do, rejudge the case in a Jewish court. And the Ramah says, V'hasvara rishona nirali ikar. The first way appears to me to be the main way, that you don't, once the person took it to a secular court and he lost, you don't bring it back to a Jewish court. The Jewish court ignores him. Tough luck on you. We fine him for that. Then it says the following. Then the Shulchan Aruch continues. Hoysa yad akum takifa. If goyim are, are in control, you live in a place where the goyim are in control, where the secular courts are in control. Ubaldino alum, ve'eno yochol ha'atzli menu b'dayin Yisrael, and the person that he's litigating against is a strong person who refuses to come to a Beis Din. Doesn't want to come. And the only way you can get what's rightfully yours is by going to a secular court. Then Yidbo'enu l'dayne Yisrael t'chila, then the halacha is like this. You have to go to a Jewish court, have the person invited that you have litigation with to come to the Jewish court and judge there. Im lo ratzo lavo, and if the person refuses to come, notul rishus mebezim, then you're allowed to take permission from the court. U'matzo b'dine akum, and then you can, the Jewish court will send you to the secular court to get what's rightfully yours. Right? And the Ramah says, V'chol zadafik shein rotzo li osai is din. It's only where the other side refuses to come to a Jewish court. Avavalav hachi osu lebeisin laharshos ladun lifnei akum. In any other circumstance, even the Jewish court is not allowed to give you permission to go and judge in a secular court. But in a case where you invited the person to come, and he didn't show up. Usually we invite him three times. He doesn't show up, right? Then we give the person the right to go and bring him to a secular court, which has more teeth, perhaps, than a Jewish court, especially in foreign lands. The Aruch HaShulchan says there's a stipulation here. It's only where the Jewish court is pretty much assured, or they're convinced that the person is right. So sending him to the secular court to get what he is demanding would be proper. But if they're not sure, or the person is wrong, then they can't send him to a secular court and give him permission to go and get what he shouldn't be getting. Okay? How do they know? So they're allowed to hear his witnesses and his proofs, even though normally they're not allowed to do that unless the other person's there who can answer and bring his witnesses and his proofs debate, you know, what's it called, and come back and have a recourse to cross-examine them or whatever it may be, right? But here the other person refuses to come. So he relinquished his right. The other person, therefore, has a right to bring his, and if he can convince the Beis Din that he's right, then they have a right to send him to a secular court. And not only that, but once the other person forced him to bring him to a secular court, and now there are court fees in a secular court that he wouldn't have had in a Jewish court, the person who refused to go to Beis Din and forced this person to get Beis Din permission to send him to a secular court, right, the other person now, in the end, is going to be required to pay all the court costs for this person, because he caused him to have these court costs, right, which he wouldn't have had he come to a Beis Din. Okay. If it can be enforced, he's chayiv to pay. He owes him the money. Whatever. If they can find a way of enforcing it, then they'll enforce it.
But people nowadays do take people to
the right. So they are reshoyim, and they're doing something that's wrong.
What if the person that takes the other person is
tinnik shenishba? He's a tinnik shenishba. Again, so you tell him you'll go to a Jewish court. If he refuses to do it, then you're allowed to go to the secular court. Right? You go to the court. Right, and if somebody forces you to go to a non-Jewish court, and you have no recourse, so you're not doing it on purpose. Right, so that's a different story. Okay, the Klichemda asks a question. So how can the Beis Din even permit someone to go to a secular court just because he's going to lose money? The halacha is that if you're going to do something that's prohibited, and not doing it would mean that you'd lose all your money. You have to lose all your money, right? If not eating something treif will cost you all your money, then you have to give up all your money not to eat the treif. So here the same thing. If it's usher to go to a non-Jewish court, then just because the guy's going to lose money, how do we permit him to go? The answer, I think, is very simple. And that is that here the prohibition is showing that the Jewish court is meaningless and you give credence to the non-Jewish court. But by going to the Jewish court to begin with and getting their permission to go to the non-Jewish court, that whole idea doesn't apply. You're showing that you're giving credence to Jewish court. The only other guy won't come. So the Jewish court now is giving you permission to go. They're the ones who are initiating this. So everything is going through the Jewish court, then the prohibition doesn't apply anymore. The prohibition is not going to a non-Jewish court. The prohibition is showing that you ignore a Jewish court. But you didn't ignore a Jewish court. And the Jewish court is the one that sent you to the non-Jewish court. Then there's no prohibition at all. It's not that you're transgressing the prohibition in order to save yourself money. The prohibition disappears because of the way that it's being done. Now, the Ramban says that the only time the Jewish court can send you to the non-Jewish court is if they first judge the case in the absence of the other person. And they then decided how much you're owed, and then they sent you to the non-Jewish court to enforce it. The Rambam, however, holds it doesn't have to be like that. As soon as the Jewish court sees the other person won't come, they can give you permission to go and to take the whole case into the non-Jewish court. Okay. So that is... What? All in the Shulchan Aruch, right. It's all in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so you should realize, again, like you said, many people today think that, you know, especially in Israel, you can go to a Beit Mishpat, which is not true. okay? And surely not in Chutz Lartz, according to the Chazon Ish. It's worse in Israel to go to a secular court than to go to a secular court in Chutz Lartz. So you should realize that that is something that is prohibited. Right, if he's willing to go to a Jewish court, fine. If he's not willing to go to a Jewish court, then you have no choice but to go to his court.
So I don't get it. You can't be a lawyer. Like, you can't work in a...
That's a big, very big problem. A lawyer can only be a lawyer if he deals with non-Jews altogether.
Yeah.
Or if he has Jews, that he won't do anything, what's it called, that is connected to the Torah.
Like,
it's very difficult to be a lawyer.
Very religious lawyer.
Yeah, okay. It depends what kind of law that they're involved in. But certain kinds of law are just the law that, what's it called, has to do with monetary things or whatever, that are not litigations. That kind of thing's not problem. Litigation, being a lawyer in litigations is problematic. Being a judge is even a bigger problem, yeah? No, if the non-Jew doesn't want to go to a Jewish court, then you have no recourse but to go to a non-Jewish court.
Then
you don't have to go to a Beis Din either. He doesn't pay anything.
No.
No. He's a non-Jew. He has no chiyuv to go to a Beis Din. If we're talking where the non-Jew is willing to go to a Beis Din, then you're not allowed to go to a non-Jewish court with him. You have to, if he's willing to go to a Beis Din, you have to go to a Beis Din. You're the Jew. The Jew, non-Jew has no chiyuv to go to a Beis Din.
So what was that about?
That's where a Jew forced you to take him to a non-Jewish court because he wouldn't come to a Beis Din. Then he, in theory, is liable for all the costs that it would cost to go to the non-Jewish court. Because he caused you to do that. You could have gone to a Beis Din and not had those costs. He refused to go to the Beis Din. Because of that, the Beis Din was forced to give you permission to go and take him to a non-Jewish court. And that involved a lot of costs that wouldn't have been had you gone to a Beis Din. So because he's the cause of that, he's chayv to pay.
Jews?
No, Jews against Jews. Not yet.
Yeah.
Jews against Jews. Jews against non-Jews, most non-Jews go to a secular court. So you have no recourse. He's not going to go to a Beis Din. He doesn't have to go to a Beis Din. No. It's non-Jewish means non-Torah. A non-Torah court. Let's not call it non-Jewish, non-Torah. An Israeli court, like we said, from the Chazon Ish, is even worse of a Chilul Hashem than a non-Jewish court. It's in Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat, Simen Chavav, chapter 26. Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, it's the same thing. Again, if there is no other recourse, okay, and you're stuck because of the laws of the land or whatever, just to visit? Oh, to visit. And I think, to visit, I don't know, why would you want to go look at a bunch of Rishoyim? It's also to look in the face of Rishoyim. The Israeli Supreme Court is, the head of the court is a Rosha Marusha, Barak, right? To go look at his face is Mustam Asr. But and they are people that are anti-Torah, anti-religious, way that is contemplated and they're trying to uproot Torah from this country. So why in the world would a person want to go and look at them even? So it's awesome. It's beyond my comprehension why somebody would want to waste his time hanging around places like that. Yeah, that's a different story. If you live in a country, okay, here in Israel that doesn't apply, because here it's recognized, a get is recognized as a divorce. But in America, I'm not sure 100%, but I think that you have to get a secular divorce in addition to a religious divorce. It's the law of the land. Okay, that you have to do. That's the law of the land. Right? That doesn't take the place of a religious divorce. But if you live in a country and the law says that if you want to get divorced, you also have to have this. They'll let you have a regular divorce, but you also have to have this. And they won't let you get married unless you have that secular divorce. Then you have to get a secular divorce. That's called Dina de Malchus Adina. That's the law of the land is the law where it doesn't contradict Torah law. If they said you can't get a Jewish divorce, only this, then you wouldn't be allowed to do such a thing. But if they say in addition to your religious divorce, we demand that you have this or we're not going to let you get married, then if you live in that country, that law applies to you. Because you're living in that country on condition that you keep their laws. Where the laws contradict the Torah, then you don't have to keep them. A non-Jewish Torah without the get is meaningless. We have a few minutes left, so let's do some other things from the Sedra. The Torah says that if you have non-kosher meat, basar basada treifa lo sochelu, if you have meat that's from an animal that was a treifa, we use treifa as an all-inclusive word for anything that's not kosher, but a treifa is a special, specific kind of prohibition. It's an animal that was mauled by a wild animal, a lion, a wolf, mauled, attacked it. And it, what's it called?
What?
Attacked by a wild animal. And the wild animal dug its claws into it, it put a hole in its heart, hole in its lungs, right? Any one of 18 different kinds of things that would make the animal basically going to die, right? Without special kinds of treatment or whatever, at least in the time the Torah was given, these things meant death, not sudden death, but eventual death. So that animal is called a treifa. And even if you slaughtered the animal properly while it was still alive, you couldn't eat the meat. That meat was called treifa. And So the Torah says what you should do with that meat. Throw it to the dogs. Okay, you can't eat it, throw it to the dogs. On the other hand, when the Torah speaks about nevela, nevela is an animal that died in any other way except that it was shechted. Died of old age, it was killed, right? You shot it through the head. Whatever way you can make an animal die, right, or an animal will die, not being slaughtered, that's called nevela. Okay? Again, a treif is an animal even if it was slaughtered properly, but it had some kind of disease. Right? It didn't have to be caused by being attacked by another animal. That's just the way the Torah describes it. But if the animal had a hole in its lung or a hole in its heart, right, because of a disease that it had, then it's also a treif. Even if it was slaughtered properly, it's not kosher. And or an animal that died and it was never slaughtered properly. That's called a nevela. When it comes to nevela, the Torah says, give it to a non-Jew. Either give it for free to a non-Jew who keeps the seven mitzvahs of Noah. He doesn't have to eat kosher. So give it to him, right, as a present. Or sell it to an idol worshiper. Right? You can't eat it. Sell it to an idol worshiper. Or give it to a frum, non-Jew. When it comes to the treifa, the Torah says, give it to the dog. So the Ibn Ezra says very simple reason why this one goes to the dog and why this one, goes to the non-Jew. He says because an animal that died either of natural causes or was killed, there's nothing wrong with the animal physically. It's just spiritually there's something wrong with that meat. So therefore, you give it to a goy. Right? But an animal that had some kind of disease, right, that it died from, then not only spiritually is there something wrong with it, there may be something physically wrong with it too. Okay, it had a hole in its heart, a hole in its lung, it may be physically impaired. So don't give it to a non-Jew and cause him to get sick. Give it to a dog. The dog can handle it. But why should you make a non-Jew sick for no purpose? That's what the Ibn Ezra says. The Gemara says, why do we give this meat to the dog? Because it's its reward. Since the dogs didn't bark when we left Mitzrayim, so they got a reward. God gives every creature reward for doing good things. The dogs didn't bark when we left Egypt. To acknowledge the fact that they didn't bark, right? They kept quiet, even during Makas Bechoros. So, I think the Vilna Gaon says, what was the big deal that they didn't bark? It says that when the Malach HaMavis is around, the dogs sense it, and they whine. And if they would have whined the night of Pesach, it would have been implied that the Malach HaMavis was killing the not God himself. So they didn't whine. It showed that God is there, not the Malach HaMavis. In any case, so we give the dog its due by giving him this meat. The Bali Atosa say a different idea, which you can learn a tremendous musa from. They say another idea. Why do you give the dog meat that was mauled by a wild animal? He says like this. He says, usually the flock has a sheepdog, a dog that watches the flock, okay? And since the dog was faithful in watching the flock, if you have now meat from that flock, an animal from that flock that you can't eat, so give it to the dog as its as a recognition of Hakara Sato. You appreciate the dog's work in watching the flock. Now, the Balei Tosa says, on the other hand, why did this animal get attacked? Because the dog didn't do his job. Had the dog done his job properly, then this animal wouldn't have been attacked. Says the Balei Tosa, true. But that doesn't erase all the other times that the dog did do his job. So this time, right, he wasn't successful. Because one time he wasn't successful doesn't mean you don't owe him gratitude for all the other times he was. So what do we see from this Balei Tosa? That if somebody did you a favor, okay, and one time they did you something bad, not only do you still owe them a gratitude, but even that one time they did the bad, and it resulted in something, give them the gratitude even through that. I mean, here you're giving the dog, right, what it caused, right, you're giving it as gratitude for all the other times. That's how you treat a dog. Unfortunately, many people don't treat people like that. They have people who did them favors, you know, for years and years, and then they did one thing to them not good, and they write them off. That destroys and erases all the good things. It's not the way to treat a dog. That's not the way to treat a human being. No, I'm not talking about a person who was false all the time and really was a... Some person really was your friend, and he did very good things to you, right? And then one time he did something not good. So you don't just discount all the good things because of one bad thing. It's not a proper way of functioning. Yeah, whatever. Again, it depends on the situation. But a normal situation where the person didn't write you off, he just did something that was harmful to you, right? But that doesn't erase all the good things he did also. Look at the bad, look at the good, right? Don't let the bad erase all the good.